Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The group Children's Rights works on behalf of children in foster care through legal advocacy. And since May is National Foster Care Month, the organization is sponsoring a campaign called Fostering the Future, which aims to educate people on what it's like to grow up in state care. Here with me now to tell us about the campaign and about some reforms to the system are Ira Lustbader, the Associate Director of Children's Rights, and Michael Place, the founder of Mind the Gap, a liaison between mental health practitioners and foster children, a current grad student, and someone who formerly spent time in foster care himself and had issues with drugs that he was prescribed. Ira, Michael, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And Michael, let me get right into your issue. What would you like to tell us about your foster care experience and particularly the administration to you of psychotropic drugs?
Yeah, well, there's many things to say, but specifically on the issue of being medicated while in foster care, I just was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and a couple of other labels that I knew I wasn't. And as a result, I was given these medications that, you know, caused me to gain a lot of weight, made me feel drowsy. And, you know, even though I really tried to advocate for myself and said over and over again, listen, I don't have these disorders. You know, all I really needed was some love and attention. For some psychiatrists, they didn't listen to that.
And do you feel that they were just trying to control you so you would be easier as a behavior problem on your foster parents? Or was this their best judgment as to what you needed to be able to, I don't know, do your schoolwork and focus on your life?
Well, I mean, as I mentioned in my blog, like, I wasn't the easiest kid, you know. I wasn't the easiest kid to handle, for sure. So I think that definitely it was about trying to control me the best way that they knew how, or the easiest way, I should say. And medication definitely was the easiest way for them. I think that it was very clear that I wasn't bipolar. And, you know, just listening or just being having a sense of where I came from and what some of the realities that I had to deal with as a kid would prove that I wasn't bipolar. I was just dealing with, you know, having a drug abuse mother or, you know, having some of the issues that I was having in a foster home at the time.
So, Ira Lustbader from Children's Rights, is this one of the issues that you're trying to draw attention to with National Foster Care Awareness Month and with your work in general?
Yes, it is. And again, thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners today. I think the most important thing that you're getting from Michael on the phone is the youth voice, right? And so Children's Rights is a national nonprofit children's advocacy organization, and we bring impact reform campaigns using the federal courts most often to reform problems, systemic problems in the child welfare system. And this campaign that we're talking about today is so important because in recognition of National Foster Care Month, we're running our second annual Fostering the Future campaign. And if you go to the website, www.fosteringthefuture.com, you see a new blog post every day like Michael's from someone who's affected by the foster care system. And this overuse of psychotropic medications is just one of, unfortunately, a number of very important systemic issues that I think the public just isn't aware of, because these foster care systems, you know, treating over 400,000 kids in foster care on any given day and over 600,000 pass through the system, they largely operated in a closed space, right? There's not a lot of public accountability. There's not a lot of federal or state oversight for failure. And that's where Children's Rights steps in, and we largely bring federal legal action infused with policy expertise to force reform when states are too unwilling to change and break the cycle of re-victimizing so many kids in the system. And so what Michael's talking about here is what we often refer to as the use of chemical restraints, right? The use of multiple psychotropic medications to actually control behavior in a punitive way. And again, these are children who have been abused and neglected. Obviously, a lot of them have some issues and challenges, and certainly in some cases, some use of medication or appropriately monitored medication is okay. But there was a study, just for example, back in 2011, I think it was, by the U.S. Government Accountability Office. And so they found that if 10% of the general population of kids is on some form of psychotropic medication, which is alarming in and of itself, they found over 35% of kids in foster care were put on psychotropic meds, and very often 4, 5, 6 psychotropic medications at a time. And so not unusual for us to learn throughout the country, this is a national issue, from local advocates that we work with trying to compel reform in meeting children who are literally doped up to control themselves, put in severe lockdown institutions when it's unnecessary, and put on psychotropic meds to control their behavior. And this is the kind of awareness that we need the public to learn about, so we can bring reform to these kinds of issues.
So, listeners, if this is National Foster Care Month, in our few minutes in this segment, would anybody like to call up, based on your experience in foster care, having grown up in whole or in part that way, or perhaps you've been a foster parent? What do people need to be aware of? What should we be talking about in addition to or as part of what we're already talking about? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, Michael, on this same issue, I see you recently started a project called Mind the Gap, which people can find at mtgap.org, which tracks information about what kinds of medication kids in foster care are prescribed, so that all the people in contact with them are aware. Can you explain a little more about the project and what you're hoping to learn?
Mm-hmm. Well, just where it came about, I was speaking with a psychiatrist because I was doing some research to really figure out why so many kids are in foster care and medicated. And at first I was trying to be objective, right? Are kids over-medicated in foster care? And I found a couple of different things, and a psychiatrist is telling me that in order to properly assess a child or youth in foster care, a psychiatrist would need information from other people who work with them besides, say, the foster parent or the social worker. And then that experience, along with the experience that I mentioned in my blog, where Michael, a kid who shared my name, who I was counseling in summer camp last year, he went to get his medication, and he came back, and he was sort of like zoned out. But prior to getting his medication, he was actively participating in the arts and crafts activities. And in that moment, I wish that there was a resource for me to tell the doctor what I had witnessed. And what I would expect the doctor to do at that moment is to write up an explanation as to why the medication was appropriate, and why, you know, Michael had to deal with the situation of being zoned out, or tamper the medication so Michael wouldn't have to be zoned out the way that he was.
So now there's going to be a lot of self-reporting through this, and so through the aggregation of people's experiences with being given drugs, you'll start to see some patterns, that kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. You get to definitely measure what the role of medication is and if it's appropriate.
Another issue, Ira, is that New York has one of the largest foster care systems in the country, and the current trend is away from institutional group homes and more toward placing children with extended families or foster families, which is probably a good thing. But there aren't enough stable and safe foster families compared to the number of kids in need. So how do you make that happen?
So public awareness, like hearing the voice of these kids on fosteringthefuture.com, forcing greater accountability over these systems, right? So if you talk about shifting resources and better management in these systems, you know, where do they break down to re-victimize kids who've already been victimized in abusive homes, right? And so unnecessary institutionalization is one of them. And so institutions cost 5-10 times more the cost of supporting foster families. And so getting states to reshift their priorities to supporting foster families not only makes better sense for kids, but you save taxpayer money. And we've seen some amazing changes in Tennessee on this issue, in Connecticut, where they've drastically reduced their reliance, their over-reliance on institutions for kids. And, you know, in those cases, in those states, it took federal civil rights litigation information from Children's Rights to help compel that reform, and that's important. But the awareness has to be continuing, right? And you see a lot of public awareness campaigns and PSAs about being foster parents, but it's still not enough. And so many of these kids can thrive in loving and permanent homes and leave custody if more resources are shifted in that direction.
Michael, how do you convince people to become foster parents if they listen even to conversations like this and think, gosh, these are kids who come from messed up backgrounds in the first place, so they're likely to be difficult, and then they're going to complain about the drugs that they are given and put them on websites? How do you convince potential foster parents that this is going to be a positive experience for them?
Yeah, I mean, I know that being a foster parent is not for everyone. It definitely isn't. And to say that every kid in foster care is going to be really difficult to handle, that's just not true. And then, you know, if you don't have to become a foster parent to be involved in the movement. There are various ways that one can be involved in the movement. And you can go to my website, mtgap.org, and email me on the email list, and I'm glad to send any links on how to, you know, get involved if someone doesn't want to be a foster parent. But, you know, it really all kids need is love, right? I know that sounds so cliche, but if you can really break down the barriers and show the kid that, listen, I'm here to love you, I'm here to support you, that speaks volumes. Like I mentioned before, you know, I needed that love and attention that my foster parents weren't giving me. And so I sought it out in the psychiatric hospital, right? And by going to this hospital, I was inundated with various medications. So in my case, I can speak for myself in saying that, you know, I know that love would have yielded a better result in my experience. I know that I would have responded better if I wasn't in a home with a foster mother who was verbally abusing me, who was an alcoholic when, you know, I left from my home with my biological mother because she was addicted to drugs. So if I didn't have these experiences, then maybe I know that I would have responded a lot better, and I wouldn't have been on medication, and I wouldn't have been difficult to deal with.
Kelly in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kelly.
Yes, I'm a psychologist who does a lot of forensic work in child protection in Brooklyn Family Court.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've learned and experienced over time is this real interaction between multiple foster care placements and medication, that the kids are traumatized by the constant, not only whatever led to the foster care placement, but also just foster care families not being able to maintain them or not a good fit. Children become more symptomatic, but it's in reaction to the environmental stressors and not necessarily their biochemistry.
How can it be made better, Kelly?
Well, I think part of it is that the fit between the foster home and the child, that something is happening in that fit that leads to these multiple placements, that sometimes gypsies are not doing adequate screening, or there's just not a good match between the child and the family that they're placed with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, when children first enter into the foster care system, they, you know, obviously they're going to be traumatized and upset and difficult to manage. But instead of treating the trauma of the displacement, medication gets thrown into the mix, and the kids become more manageable. But if you remove the medication, you see that the underlying issues that were causing the problem weren't dealt with.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you very much. And Ira, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I think this caller actually touches upon a major systemic issue that unfortunately we see all over the country. And again, this is not rocket science. These are not permanently intractable issues. Systems need the resources. They need front-end workers who have manageable workloads so they can spend the time matching kids to available placements, particularly family placements, whether they're kin or stranger foster homes. The resources have to be able to match kids. When that doesn't happen, kids bounce around. That's more traumatic than even the abuse that they suffered before they came into care. So the intervention has to be better than the problems that led these children into the system in the first place. And what she's exposing is absolutely right. We see this in too many systems, and it takes every lever pulled to make these systems more accountable. It takes voices like Michael's and other foster kids. It takes impact litigation sometimes. It takes legislative awareness and higher priorities in resources. But, this has to be done, and it can be done well.
And I see callers all over our board who want to make the exact same point as Kelly from within the system, just as she is a child psychologist who works in Brooklyn. A social worker in Manhattan says, worked with a six-year-old over Medicaid, over-medicated. A psychologist from Huntington says he sees a lot of over-medication. Let's take one more. Stephanie in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, Brian. Thank you. I just wanted to say that the foster situation, can you hear me?
Yeah, and you're a child psychologist, right? For foster children.
I'm a child psychiatrist.
Okay.
I prescribe.
That means you can prescribe medication, yes.
Yes, yes. I do some of the things that psychologists do. I do therapy, and I assess children, but the psychologist is the one that does testing, and they do other more technical things. We do, we're actually the...
You're the psychopharmacologist. You have the...
Well, I call myself a psychiatrist because I like to think of myself as not just prescribing medicine, although that's...
Right, but you've got the power to do so. So where do you enter this whole conversation that we've been having in your private practice?
Well, basically, we make the recommendations for a lot of things. And what I want to say is that foster care has often treated us, the foster care system, as prescribers and not as... assessors and medical evaluators and recommenders, because we have a very broad knowledge of the child's welfare medically and emotionally, and often we are pigeonholed into the situation where we can only do that. Unfortunately, it's a process that's devolved into that, and it shouldn't be like that.
So you're saying your peers are prescribing too much medication because they're not being used also as therapists?
Well, I would say that no. I would say that each of my peers needs to speak for themselves. I personally do not over-prescribe, and I tell kids right away, if you feel sleepy, if you feel groggy, if you're zoned out, you are not getting the right dose, and I will change it. Mm-hmm. And that's how every doctor should be treating their patients. I don't care if they're a kid or an adult.
Got it.
The other thing I want to just say is that foster care is a very, very complicated situation. And you have children with multitudes of problems, developmental often, family problems, problems of mental illness and heredity, that all contribute attachment issues, which often makes it difficult to help them attach to new situations.
Stephanie, thank you very much. We just have a minute left. But Ira, do you see any new approach to this on the part of the de Blasio administration? Because this is a city issue. Each mayor comes in with a foster care policy. We saw great change under Giuliani and again under Bloomberg. Is there a de Blasio foster care policy at this point?
I think we haven't seen a grand policy yet. And so I think there's a need to give him an opportunity to lay that out. There's certainly a potential for positive change here, but there's also very serious problems. I mean, the only thing I would disagree with is while foster care is certainly complicated in a lot of ways and nuanced, what's not nuanced is children bouncing around the system, not having enough resources to house them safely and appropriately, kids on five or more psychotropic medications because they weren't adequately assessed when they came in. So this needs change on the ground with good therapists, good foster parents, workers that have manageable loads. It takes resources, and it takes pushing systemic levers. You really got to attack this at all levels. And the youth voice on this sometimes just gets lost. And that's why we think this Fostering the Future campaign is so important. And it's the second time we've done it. Last year, the response was so great. And I would just urge your listeners to visit www.fosteringthefuture.com. Read these blogs. Share them with your friends, your colleagues. Help raise awareness from the voice of foster youth. Visit Children's Rights, www.childrensrights.org. Like us on Facebook. book, get out there and do your part to raise awareness on this, because we all got a part in this. We're really talking about hundreds of thousands of kids, and, you know, that's the next generation. That's our future. We all got to step up.
Ira Lesbader is the associate director of the group Children's Rights. Michael Place, the founder of Mind the Gap, a liaison between mental health practitioners and foster children, has also been with us. He's also a grad student and someone who spent time in foster care himself. And his website is at MTGAP, for Mind the Gap, mtgap.org. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, with the World Cup soccer tournament soon to begin in Brazil, amid construction problems and protests, New York Times sports columnist George Vesey next on the beauty and the dark side of the world's favorite sport. Stay with us.